One former vice president, John Nance Garner, famously dismissed the office as not worth a bucket of warm spit, although he might not have been as polite. And it's not far off from former President Trump's recent assessment.
Historically, the vice president, in terms of the election, does not have any impact. I mean, virtually no impact. You have two or three days where there's a lot of commotion as to who, like you're having it on the Democrat side, who it's going to be. And then that dies down, and it's all about the presidential pick.
Tonight, Vice President Kamala Harris's running mate, Tim Walz, will speak. Here's what she's said about him.
Tim Walz was the kind of teacher and mentor that every child in America dreams of having, and that every kid deserves. The kind of coach, because he's the kind of person who makes people feel like they belong and then inspires them to dream big. And that's the kind of vice president he will be.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. University of Dayton Associate Professor of Political Science Christopher Devine co-authored the book Do Running Mates Matter, which came out during the last presidential election cycle. He joins us in this recorded interview along with Bowling Green State University Professor of Political Science Robert Alexander. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thanks for having us,
Lucy.
Christopher, you've written all about running mates, what they bring to the ticket. Does former President Trump have a point that his pick doesn't really matter?
You know, as from an academic standpoint, I'm listening for the nuance here and kind of what got the headline saying they have no impact. But then he also says they virtually have virtually no impact. And that little qualifier there is, I think, important because I would never say, you know, answer to the title of our book, running mates don't matter. They do. But their effects are so easily overstated that I think saying they have virtually no impact is fairly close to the truth. And the way that they do have an impact more than anything else, and Donald Trump may experience this, Kamala Harris might experience this, you know, for the better or worse in those cases, they influence how people think about the person at the top of the ticket. Tim Walz's choice tells us something about who Kamala Harris is and what kind of president she would be. The choice of J.D. Vance over, for that matter, he could have gone back to Mike Pence or any other number of Republicans, tells us something about what Donald Trump is looking for in a second term. It can tell you about their political ideology or political priorities. It can tell you about their seriousness about running for office. Are they really focused on governing, or are they, you know, focused on other things, political things, or just winning an election? So I think it is very telling to voters and has this kind of marginal impact by maybe shifting slightly the way they think about the presidential candidate.
Well, Robert, the office of Vice President of the United States doesn't really have a whole lot of official duties, does it?
It doesn't typically. And in 2020, we saw something that one of the few areas that they actually have some responsibility as President of the Senate with Mike Pence. And so January 6th was one of his responsibilities was essentially to count the votes at the meeting, the joint session of Congress. And that was much of the dispute that led to much of the things that were happening on January 6th. Interestingly, I think J.D. Vance probably secured his spot as Trump's running mate in large part due to his saying that Mike Pence did not do the right thing and that Mike Pence should have sent Electoral College votes back because they were disputed, which the Constitution does not give the vice president authority to do that. The 12th Amendment does not give the vice president authority to do that. So it would appear that Vance was going a little bit further than what, you know, the Constitution would say, and certainly what Mike Pence was willing to do. But you're absolutely right. So to answer the question, they don't typically have a lot of responsibility. In recent years, they've gained some. I don't want to say token, but some kind of areas that the president might carve out for them, whether it be some, you know, Al Gore looking to, quote unquote, reinvent government through the National Performance Review, for instance, Dick Cheney kind of being George W. Bush's eyes and ears when it comes to foreign policy. So some of those times they take that as kind of more of a prescriptive piece from the presidents themselves.
Robert, in more recent years, Kamala Harris is the vice president. She's had some important tie-breaking votes in the Senate, too, hasn't she?
She has, and you know, there's been some research on this, and the fact again that, you know, vice presidents, you know, are that tie-breaking vote in a, and especially when we have a very closely contested Senate, is can be really important. You know, when we look at that role from that perspective, that individual can be really critical. We've seen it in particular when it comes to some judgeships, some appointments when it comes to judges. So yeah, that is yet another important role that they have.
Christopher, lots of pundits talk about how vice presidential candidates can make the difference in a swing state or maybe help turn out voters of similar backgrounds. What has your research shown about that?
Those are two main ways that maybe people think about running mates having an effect, is that they can, as I often like to put it, kind of buy a state on the cheap, or maybe even some group of voters, and just say, you know, hey, what's the strategy here? We could offer policy, we could campaign hard with these folks. Well, let's just pick a vice president. One fell swoop, we'll deliver this group of voters. I think it's overly simplistic, and really the evidence just isn't there for what we call these targeted effects, that people will just be so excited about the potential of whoever it is being the vice president of the United States, that they'll basically cast aside their preference for president, or they'll decide to vote when they weren't going to vote, just so they can see this person in office. So, you know, my co-author Kyle Kopko and I, we've tested this many different ways in our book and in some other research. Most of the cases where people think there must have been some kind of effect, like Mike Pence in 2016, everybody knows that he delivered evangelicals, and that might have won Donald Trump the presidency. Well, actually, when you look at this evidence that we have, it's not data that we collected, but we were able to capitalize on this, a survey tracking people throughout the election, and we could zero in on evangelicals specifically, and we could see, controlling for other factors, was there a spike in their support from where they were before he was chosen to afterwards? Did basically evangelicals get on board because Mike Pence was picked? And we just don't find evidence for that. We don't find it for Sarah Palin and women in 2008, on and on. Really, the only example we find of that in recent years is Kamala Harris in 2020. And this is a follow-up paper we did because, of course, the election happened after our book came out. And we looked at her effect on women, Black voters, and Black women voters in particular. What we see there is that opinions about her influenced voters more within those groups than they did for the general electorate. So we could say she did have this, what we call, targeted effect. But I can tell you, it was pretty small. So it's not that these effects never will happen. But again, it goes back to the effect's always going to be marginal. Even if people really like or dislike a vice presidential candidate, we're seeing J.D. Vance with high negatives right now, for example. I'm not saying that won't matter to voters, but to the extent it matters, it's going to be with a pretty small group of voters.
We're talking in this recorded interview about whether presidential running mates matter, and if they do, how. So, Christopher, you know, Robert was just talking a few minutes ago about his thoughts on why former President Trump chose Senator J.D. Vance as his running mate. What do you think, from a political perspective, why do you think former President Trump chose Senator Vance to be his running mate over, you know, the other options he had?
Well, I agree with how Rob was framing that about the J.D. Vance pick in contrast to Mike Pence. And I like to think of it this way. You know, Donald Trump's been through this process before in 2016, had a very careful process. And I think he deserves credit for this, that he picked someone in Mike Pence after looking at some other possibilities. Frankly, some people like Newt Gingrich and Chris Christie, of course, changed a lot over time. People who at that time, I think, had some problems that Pence didn't really present. Pence was someone who is very well qualified for the office, and VPs are often expected to be loyal. They are in a subordinate position. They're there to support the presidential candidate and later the president. And he did that. He was incredibly loyal. A lot of people forget, after the Access Hollywood tape came out, Mike Pence, who was well known for, you know, kind of his moral stances and presenting himself as an evangelical Christian, he was one of the first people who came out to support Donald Trump and kind of signal to others that that was okay. He stuck with him through 4 years in office. It would be a challenge to find anything where he was what you could call disloyal to Donald Trump. It was one thing, January 6th. That's what's made him a villain to Donald Trump. One might have noticed that he did not speak at the Republican National Convention. He's basically thrown out of Republican politics over that one thing, because Donald Trump has given the signal that that is unacceptable. And so it makes you think, going into this process, surely Trump would not want to repeat that mistake in order to just pick off some group of voters or something like that, pick someone who also might say no to him in a similar type of situation. And in J.D. Vance, again, as Rob was describing well there, he picked someone who has told us that he would have done something differently. Folks might even notice the quote, I just pulled it up. It was, if I had been vice president, I would have told the states like Pennsylvania and Georgia and so many others that we needed to have multiple ballots submitted, which is not in the law. It's this invented power that he is describing.
Robert, you and Christopher were two co-authors of a commentary that raised questions about that choice and questioned whether Senator Vance will be ready to govern on day one if the Republican ticket is elected this cycle. Walk us through the logic there.
Well, you know, the clip that you played of Trump being asked that question, he did not give a ringing endorsement of his running mate. He did not say, oh, of course, JD is ready on day one. Instead, he talked about, well, vice presidents don't really matter. That's not really what you want to hear from the guy that's running the ticket. And that was in the face of, you know, some criticism of Vance. So I think that was pretty telling right from the very beginning. J.D. Vance does not have a lot of experience as a political office holder. He's in his second year in the United States Senate. Never held public office prior to that. Typically, vice presidents have had a little bit more experience in the past. If we go back to that Republican National Convention, just as Chris was talking about, this kind of fealty that Vance was just kind of showing to Trump, saying, I'm willing to go where maybe others weren't, was probably most important on Trump's mind. Typically, in these vice presidential selections, you see some kind of counterbalancing. And, you know, a lot of commentators and a lot of folks, even within the Republican Party, were asking the question, what is it that J.D. Vance is bringing to the ticket? Like, where is he having that balance? You could see that with Mike Pence, a lot of experience, congressperson, so on, governor, but also, you know, kind of balancing on that evangelical side. With J.D. Vance, you've kind of seen this metamorphosis, this transformation of this Trump critic to someone who basically parrots Donald Trump. You go back to that RNC convention, and at that moment, I believe that Trump is going, look, I've got a chance to start building legacy here. And thinking about, you know, my heir apparent, who is going to be best suited for that? He's only got one term remaining. And so at the end of those 4 years, who would then be able to carry that MAGA banner if Trump indeed is selected? And I think he saw that J.D. Vance would be that person. That's not necessarily, again, maybe the best person for that position at that moment. But I think Trump was looking more toward legacy than he was toward qualification.
We'll continue our conversation after a short break. And later in the program, we'll discuss privacy concerns following the Supreme Court decision that overturned Roe v. Wade. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our recorded conversation about whether presidential running mates matter, and if they do, how. My guests are University of Dayton Associate Professor of Political Science and co-author of the book, Do Running Mates Matter?, Christopher Devine, and Bowling Green State University Professor of Political Science, Robert Alexander. Christopher, you wrote a lot in your book about John McCain's choice to pick former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin as his running mate and how that played out for his campaign. Do you see any similarities between that situation and former President Trump picking Senator J.D. Vance?
2008 was a really interesting selection process, VP selection. People may know the backstory, maybe not, that actually John McCain wanted to pick Joe Lieberman as his VP that year, who was then an independent senator. He lost a Democratic primary for Senate in 06 after having been Al Gore's vice presidential candidate on the Democratic ticket in 2000, but, you know, was a little too moderate for some Democrats. And so he lost that primary, but was able to win as an independent. McCain wanted to put him on there basically as a statement of bipartisanship, statement about support for the Iraq War, for example, and other things. And he got this feedback when it was informally floated to the party that was just not acceptable. Joe Lieberman was too conservative for the Democratic Party, was too liberal for the Republican Party, including on issues such as abortion. So he had to walk that back at the last minute. And they ended up doing, after having gone through a more traditional vetting process, they really had to go back to square one and did this rushed, you know, kind of 72-hour vetting process of Sarah Palin, who was suddenly discovered at that point by the campaign. And the idea then was that they were so far behind against Barack Obama. This is in late August, very late selection. They made it August 29th in Ohio, by the way. And when they picked her, they were way behind. And the thought was this could be a game changer. That's the term that's often used for it. This could totally, just fundamentally change the dynamics of the race. And, you know, it went well at first, but over time, people decided she really wasn't ready to be president. we can show in our book statistically that when people thought that she was not ready to be president, many did, they became more likely to doubt John McCain's judgment. Again, they weren't so much voting on whether she should be vice president or not, but what did her pick tell them about whether John McCain should be president? And for a guy who had been running a campaign based on his superior experience versus Barack Obama, which was true, it seemed to undercut that narrative. And people said, well, John McCain, your judgment's not so great, and maybe I shouldn't vote for you. And the flip of that was on the Democratic side for Barack Obama, who was less experienced. He picked someone in Joe Biden as vice president, who had a great deal of experience, especially in foreign policy at that time, nearly four decades in the Senate. And so that pick improved perceptions of Barack Obama's judgment and made people more likely to vote for him. So if we compare all this to Donald Trump's pick of J.D. Vance, you know, he picked someone, as Rob was just describing, who has not much experience. I would describe Vance's least qualified VP pick in modern times. And that's just a fact. He has less experience even than Sarah Palin, who prior to serving those 2 years as governor when she was picked, had also served in state and local office for about a decade. I think the difference could be that with Sarah Palin, you know, she was received well at first. It was really when she started doing media interviews and other things that didn't scream competence and readiness to people. She seemed to not perform well in that role. That's when people really started to doubt her qualifications. So it's sort of a mixture of what you have on paper, but also how you perform in the spotlight. So J.D. Vance, to the extent he can perform better in media interviews and rallies, may not be judged as harshly on that. We'll just have to see how voters respond to him.
Robert, that commentary that you and Christopher co-authored about whether J.D. Vance is ready to serve as president if needed, you came to a very different conclusion about Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. Talk about what you see as the major differences between those two candidates.
It's very interesting seeing J.D. Vance from a few years ago from seeing him today. And a big piece of that is his turnaround. And I think some voters, particularly if you're pretty apathetic about politics, they want somebody that has at least some conviction. And the fact that J.D. Vance has had this major turnaround from being someone who is Trump America's next Hitler to being his biggest cheerleader is a little off-putting to a lot of voters that maybe, you know, are already a little cynical about the way that things are in politics. Walz, on the other hand, is someone who has been pretty standard in his viewpoints. He speaks about progressive politics and actually acts upon progressive politics in kind of this kind of broader fashion than just straight identity politics. He's got he's connecting with voters, I think, in a little different way. It's fascinating to kind of look at, the public opinion polls thus far. You know, we've got four candidates that are running, presidential and vice presidential. Only one of them has a positive net favorable rating, and that's Tim Walz. He's almost 5% positive favorable, whereas J.D. Vance is 9% unfavorable. Trump, 9% unfavorable. Harris has really climbed in recent days. Part of that could be, as Chris was pointing out, you know, showing good judgment with Tim Walz. So there are a lot of people that hadn't really made up their mind on her. And over the last few weeks, we're seeing her favorable rating really increase considerably. Walz probably hasn't hurt, again, kind of speaking in that, what's the judgment of Harris, again, kind of balancing out the ticket. You know, you've got this upper Midwest governor in camo, football coach, gruff, you know, talking about such things, but also kind of talking about progressive politics in a way that's accessible to, you know, your folks that are, you know, talking about the living room or kitchen table topics with feeding kids, fairness, not wanting the government in your private lives. You know, those are typically Republican talking points. And Walz has been able to kind of turn those around to talking points for the Democratic Party. So that's been very interesting to see, especially as kind of a boil with J.D. Vance.
Christopher, Senator Vance has taken a lot of heat for resurfaced comments about childless cat ladies. And as Robert just mentioned, his harsh criticism of former President Trump before he became a Trump supporter. Do you think that could hurt the Republican ticket?
It could hurt how people think about Donald Trump, again, for having chosen him. And I think what's so striking to me about these videos, some of the comments he's made, it's not that something bad is coming out about a VP candidate. You know, this is part of why presidential candidates have to choose wisely. I think they should tend to favor people who have been nationally vetted before. You might think, well, this person's run a statewide race. We know everything there is to know about them. No, no, no. You never know as much as you're going to until someone runs a national race and has the entire national media and opposition research machines focused on them, right? So something bad is going to come out. It's going to be Tim Walz, and there's some efforts to do that now, whatever. You know, there's always going to be something. What's striking about J.D. Vance is that this was very public. This is part of how he ran for the Senate here in Ohio, how he especially was trying to win the primary. I think that was the big hurdle, clearly, was trying to get Donald Trump's endorsement, which would lead to winning the primary, which is exactly what happened for him, as it was for Bernie Moreno recently. This is how he ran his campaign, going on a lot of these, you know, conservative, in some cases kind of fringe, you know, podcasts or radio shows or TV or whatever, and trying to demonstrate that he was the biggest, the person most aligned with them. And again, some of these were kind of fringe elements. So he would make these outlandish statements, the cat lady stuff, you know, or just going after people without children, saying Democrats were, you know, the party was run by people without children. You know, he did this in fundraising efforts and things like that. So for the Trump campaign, look, the vetting process is there to bring out all the things that could be damaging. Sometimes it's political statements. Sometimes it's medical records that could become an issue in the campaign. It's financial records. You know, this happened to Geraldine Ferraro when she was the first woman vice presidential candidate in 1984. You find out things in the campaign. So the vetting process, this multi-month process, typically, it wasn't for Kamala Harris, but it was for Donald Trump. It's there to discover these things and price them into the selection. So you say, could we live with this coming out? Maybe we'll even leak it in advance just to kind of get people used to it further away from the election so it doesn't impact things as much. They didn't do that. This stuff came out kind of on its own after the selection. And I don't think they were unaware of it, but they seemed to think that it wasn't going to be a problem. And so it leads me back to, for his campaign staff, which is mostly doing the vetting, but then ultimately for the decision maker and Donald Trump, what does it tell us about how careful and how serious they are about major decisions, that they would either not know about these kinds of wild comments or think, hey, that's fine. You know, that's part of our brand. It's hard to say, well, this doesn't speak to anything about us, or even Trump saying, well, that's okay because VP candidates don't matter. They should have known that this was a problem in advance, and they seem to be caught flat-footed by it.
Robert, you know, Governor Walz has taken some heat, too, for 2018 comments when he referenced carrying weapons of war in war, even though he never carried weapons in combat. Senator Vance has certainly seized on that. Do you think that could hurt the Democratic ticket?
I mean, some of this is just red meat for your base. And those in the base are going to come after Tim Walz. As you know, you saw a lot of this kind of stolen valor argumentation kind of coming out there last week. But again, you know, most voters are not paying that kind of deep attention to it. And again, what the media is attracted to is another piece of it. If everything is kind of swatting away stories about your vice presidential choice, that's not a good vice presidential choice. You know, if you're the presidential candidate, you don't want to spend your time defending such things. I will say that Walz seems to be able to defend a lot of those things on his own. He's had a lot of folks come to his defense on that. He doesn't seem to be kind of making controversy as he goes. So there doesn't appear to be a lot of kind of outlandish statements that he's said thus far that he's had to defend. But Vance also is kind of, you know, on a daily basis, something new seems to either come out from his past or things that he's even saying on the campaign trail. So for instance, you know, I had to check twice to see if this was misinformation or not when, you know, I had read something that he told his kid to shut the hell up when Donald Trump was, you know, telling him that he was going to be his vice presidential nominee. We all understand that this is a big moment, but, you know, maybe there's other ways to handle that. I had thought that maybe that was, no, somebody's got to be making that up. And then you see him saying such things. So again, kind of swatting those things away is not really how you want to spend your time campaigning. So, you know, the first rule of thumb is your choice shouldn't hurt you. A majority of presidential elections come down to less than a stadium of voters. It's not a lot of people out there in several swing states that are going to determine the outcome of this election. And as Chris's research has pointed out, it's a marginal decision to, you know, when we're talking about that vice presidential nominee. But if we're talking about 10, 20, 30,000 voters in just a few key states, which many elections have come down to numbers like that, then it will matter. And so you, again, you don't want to alienate voters. You want to bring them on in. I think by most all measures, Vance has had a much more difficult rollout than Tim Walz has.
Well, I've been talking with University of Dayton Associate Professor of Political Science and co-author of the book, Do Running Mates Matter, Christopher Devine, and Bowling Green State University Professor of Political Science, Robert Alexander. Thank you both so much for your time today. Up next, we'll discuss privacy concerns following the Supreme Court decision that overturned Roe v. Wade. This is Cincinnati Edition.